Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just the time for us to join the one and only Ahmed Tarek, our counselor Ahmed Tarek. And Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tell me how you're doing this fine, beautiful morning.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alan and salam to all our radio listeners on a beautiful Sunday morning. Alhamdulillah, Allah blessed us with another day, Shafa'at.
Absolutely, Ahmed. Last week you met a lucky. I'm going to meet lucky later on. I mean, outing now. At about 10 o'clock, I'll be meeting Lucky, and, you know, maybe you had a lack of breakfast with him. I'm going to have lovely lunch with him, inshallah. But looking to the kafan dafan side of things, what's the latest, Ahmed?
Shabbat, alhamdulillah, everything at the moment is very, very quiet. I was just reading one article where this morning paper says there was a person that went to check down boyfriend's remains failed. But yet, in Islam, we don't cremate. And this guy was actually cremated, and there was an insurance claim for about 20 million. So there's a big saga there. He's gone to court. And, you know, now they even, our people are even going to that extent to go and rip the insurance industry and claim the body to be cremated and all that. Yeah, they did an investigation, and they found out there was no such person was cremated on that day or anything like that, and the body was taken from RK Khan to a funeral parlor, and there after that it was cremated. Now they're claiming 20 million rand from Momentum Insurance. So, you know, these are the things that happens, you know, wherever there's money, there's a gap. They want to do something to defraud the insurance industry. Now they even going in that extent. But alhamdulillah, other than that, on the kafan dafan side, it's been very, very quiet. Our issue with the Department of Health as well as the Justice Department, we have not had any reply. I've given them till the end of the month, and we will be sending them another letter to find out, you know, what is happening. They haven't come back to us. Maybe I need to go to Victoria and maybe to meet the top Raki is there to tell them now, you know what, we are ready now. What do we do? We have seen the machine. We have got the infrastructure in place. We have spoken to people who will be able to put up the building for us. We're ready. So now we're waiting for their consent so that we'll be able to put this thing, as we said, between June and July, we want to get it up and running. It'll be the first model in the country. Let's see what happens, inshallah, Shabbat.
Absolutely, Ahmed. Daniel, you got your finger on the pulse, and Allah bless you for that. And, you know, when it comes to that machine, have you secured all the funds for it, Ahmed?
Shafat, there is international donors, and it will be more like a business than anything else. But in the long run, the person who is investing the money is going to, it is a business for them. End of the day, they will be, instead of the state is costing them 15,000 rand per body for postmortem, we'll cut that cost down to about 5,000 rand. So that is a big, massive saving. And based on that feasibility we have done, it will be a plus for the state. So that is the big plus factor. And there will be less labor incentive. There will be less manpower. There will be more saving to the state. So let's see what happens from there onwards. We'll see how we're going once we get a reply from them on which way they want to go, and then from there we'll take it, Shabbat.
I'm looking at a message on the screen here. It says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Tarek. Which shaitan thought of making business out of our people dying and having all these different types of funerals with the big Mercedes-Benz and big tarpaulins and big, all things big? The poor man, his own life was a poor bicharo, but in the end, he's going to the cover in a limousine. Which shaitan thought of this? Please, Ahmed, try and get rid of these shaitans. Ahmed, how do you respond to that?
This is, you know, for the non-Muslim, this is a massive industry. It goes into a couple billions of rand. And you'll see wherever there's mortuaries are, if you take Pinetown, if you take Phoenix, if you take Bakrani, previously it was in Gale Street. You'll see all around the mortuaries, you'll find undertakers there, because this is a massive industry, because they sell insurance policy. Secondly, they are insured for big amount. You know, you pay like in the region of about 50 rand and you can get up to 100,000 rand cover. So they give you full cover. So that's why you'll find they come in big limousines, they got vehicles, backup vehicles, and you name it, they put massive tents and they dress the whole tent up, you know, drape it up and all that. For them, it's business. So, you know, for us, it's the cheapest and the best way how we do. But yes, it's mind-boggling to them. And in fact, you know, I'll give you one scenario where in Transkei, and you get Zulus and you get Khoisas. The Khoisas are always like, you know, the upper class in the African culture. And we did one Mayat, brother have accepted Islam, and all his other brothers were millionaires and all that. They had a lot of business in the Transkei area, and they were into big businesses, farming and supermarkets and everything in Transkei. And we buried this one brother, and all his family came with 4x4s and everything. When we, fortunately, I was in Transkei at that time, and I was with our Muslim burial service, and they said, you know, Ahmed, while you're here, come, let's help us here with this one. Yeah, and I was there. And when they came with the 4x4s and they saw the way that how we bury his brother, and then we gave his one brother the permission to say, you know what, you want to go down in the grave to assist and all that. You know, he was like reluctant. So we helped him, and we did everything there, and we closed the grave, and how we did it ourselves, you know, with them, they were people, they come, the undertaker does everything. They don't even pick up the sand and put it in the, you know, like how we do it, the sunnah way, the three times we put the sunnah way, and then we use the spade and all that. When they saw how we did it, Shafat, you won't believe it, the same day, there was two other brothers, they've also, including the mother, they all accepted Islam. And that is the power of how we do things, Shafat.
All right, there's a gremlin as a supporting there. That is an absolutely brilliant story, and it's so wonderful that you share that with us. And, you know, people get inspired, and Allah bless you for that, Ahmed. But, you know, when we find that our people generally, you know, most of them wouldn't even know how to give a dawah to non-Muslims, especially, I mean, you look at a simple thing like mayat, death. Everyone knows they're going to die, Ahmed. But in your case, I think you take every opportunity to give dawah using mayat as a tool, Ahmed.
You know, Shafat, you know, when we had Fatima Mir, I think you remember the late Fatima Mir, Allah give her Jannat, and she was an activist in our city here. Yeah. And firstly, when they wanted to make it a state funeral, they came to me, they said, you know what, from now on, we're taking over. Because when there's a state funeral, they take over immediately, the government coming to play, and then you got like no say. We said, no, hold on. She's a Muslim, number one. Secondly, we have got all the say. We will do how we want to do things. He says, you know what, this is a state funeral. You all have to abide by what we want. So we need your ID, we need the undertaker, Ibrahim Randri, he wanted his ID. They wanted to first do a check on us, whether we, you know, who we are and everything. They did all that. We told them that, fortunately, Fazil Sufi was around too. Then we said, no, this is how we do things. And they accepted it. So they took it to the exhibition center the morning. She passed away late afternoon on a Friday, if I remember. I went to the house in Sydenham, and we took it for ghusl. We brought it at home. That Sunday morning, they barricaded the whole area and everything. They brought it down to the exhibition center. They had an open, you know, a lot of dignitaries from all over the country came, because she was a high-powered politician, and they all came there. Then we told him, we're only giving you X amount of time. And we gave them from 11 to 12:30. Thereafter that, we took it to Grace Street Masjid. All those dignitaries and everything, we made provision for parking there. So they came. So in the back row of the Grace Street Masjid, We put chairs for them. All these guys, we made sure they came inside to see how we even perform. Our salat first was for Zohar salat, and after that, the Janazah salat, because it was a big mayat. And we showed them, and even when we took them to the Kabristan to show them exactly how we do things. And that is how we have to show people that even somebody comes to your mayat, bring him in, show him, you know what I mean? You know, you can't bring them inside the house, you know, because in terms of park staff and all that, fine. You know, at least if we welcome him there, when we're going with the mayat, when they're going to masjid, we are allowed to put them in the back of the masjid and let them have a look at it and see for themselves that how we do things in the simple, dignified way and the quickest way and the cheapest way, Shafa.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmad. And then a message here, it says, Assalamualaikum, Ahmad Bhai. Please warn our Egyptian and Pakistani brothers that it is better for them to bury the deceased here in this country than to put it than to put the mayat through so much of a zulum by sending it overseas. Ahmad, how do you respond to that?
So, we've been talking about this for the last 20, 25 years, all our Pakistani brothers and sisters. They got one policy. They said, no, they want to send it to the family there because they got bulk of the family in Pakistan, Bangladeshi, Indian, Egyptian, Tanzanian, Americans too, some of them. America, we did send from there. UK, we sent from here. So on the, especially with the Pakistani Bangladeshis, they, every day there may be one or two going to Pakistan or Bangladesh, but we're trying to educate them to say, you know, the Sharia rule is quick as, very quick as possible. They don't want to know nothing. They said, no, our parents are there, our family is there. We want to bury it in our homeland. That's the only thing we can do. We can only give them, explain them the Sharia law and tell them this is it. They don't want to accept it. There's nothing we can do, Shafaat.
Assalamu alaikum, Ahmad Tarak, Brother Shafaat Ahmad Khan. A lovely show indeed. I would like to know from Ahmad Tarak, the books on mayat and burial. Where can I get that? Ahmad?
Shafaat, you can get the books are available at IG Hussein. The name of the book, I can give it to you. I keep, you know, when I'm with radio especially, I keep the book right next door to me. It says The Law of Janaza. It is with the IG Hussein, you'll be able to get it. Get it Kalimuddin Bookshop. And some of the, even you'll get it at the Al Ansar Bookshop too. They have got it. I saw it this sometime when I was around. I don't know if they got any more of those things. Or they can contact me. I can get them a one copy of that book, no problem.
Jazakallah khairah for that. Ahmad is your go-to man, people. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ahmad Farak, I know that there are a lot of burial societies that are using outdated vehicles, but these vehicles seem to be very good and strong. But for example, just the other day, I saw 1967 Valiant. It is still in tip-top shape. Ahmad, how come you keep such old vehicles that are over 50 years old?
Shafaat, but I think the Valiant, the brother is talking about, I think if I'm not mistaken, I did give one to Stanger when the vehicle was out of order. I assist, you know, whenever the burial society one, I always get whoever has got more than one, two, if they got excess and they got a problem with their vehicle, I always make a plan to make sure that they get a vehicle so they know they have got at any one time they have got a vehicle. The reason most of our vehicles are in tip-top condition, first and foremost, is the service part of it. Secondly, our vehicles don't do massive mileage or anything. In the last 15 years, you know, we did a deal with Durban South Toyota, and what he does, Nasser Aku, the CEO of Durban South Toyota, we have did a deal. He brings in anything like between 10 and 12 vehicles with Toyota South Africa at a price for us. So then I phone to all the burial societies and tell them, you know what, we have got vehicles at our disposal at this price. The last one we did about, I think it was 2 years ago, for $385,000. The actual price of the vehicle was $695,000. So there was a massive saving. But Nasser give something towards the vehicle himself. So in other words, if it may be 450,000, so he gave it at 385 because he put something from Durban South Toyota for the community. So we phone every burial society and say, you know what, we got a vehicle. You want to update your vehicle? Then he says, yeah, we got two, but you want to update one? Then I tell him, okay, fine. The one that you will be redundant or you want to replace it, give it to certain burial society, you know, the outskirts of Durban. They need it there, like, you know, into Transkei, you know, the smaller towns they might need. So we give them, and we also empower some of the other areas where they don't have any burial vehicle or anything. Let them form a burial society there and start it with this used vehicle, so that eventually they get to know how Mayat are done, how to pick up, how to take. We give them all the training, and from there, they're on their own as well. So that's how it be. In fact, the next allocation should come out in the next couple of months. Hopefully, I don't know how many vehicles will be allocated this year to us. As soon as that comes through, then we can call to all our burial society to upgrade their vehicles.
This message says, I'm living in the South Coast. A lot of bodies are being washed out. Are people murdering people and throwing them into the ocean? And what is our East Ukraine doing about it? There's been an influx of these bodies, but it's not reported widely. Why, Ahmed? Ahmed, your response there?
Shafat, as far as bodies are being washed out and all that, you know, if it comes washed up, then we will know because it has to go for a post-mortem. And that becomes unnatural. So I don't know. Yes, we do find one or two couple of months ago we found. But other than that, we didn't feel because, you know, then obviously an inquest docket is open, there's cases are open, but we don't have a major issue. Like every month we're getting 10, 15 bodies that's been dumped into the sea or anything like that. No, unless there's a boat or fishing boat or something capsized, then the people got drowned there and those bodies were washed out, then it's a different story. But other than that, we haven't had too many incidents like this, Shafak.
Now, when it comes to flooding and so forth, the soft sand, and the bodies get washed out and they sometimes go into the river and so forth. What happens in that case? Is that body taken back to... I mean, how would you know that it came from a certain cemetery, Ahmed?
It can't come from a certain cemetery, or maybe, you know, there's a massive flooding or anything like that. Some of the body, I know in 1987, the Mirwan Cemetery, all those cemetery right next to the river there, mainly Muslim ones, the non-Muslim ones, one or two bodies got washed away because it was very, very close to the river and there was a you know, in that time, by Bondi side, you'll see that whole place, you couldn't even come into Durban because the place was totally flooded in 87, those floods. But what happens in a case like that, if a body, especially in the sea, somebody drowns in the sea, like there's one brother there from Stanger, up till today, they haven't found his body. He was somewhere in Port Jefferson side. Up till today, we haven't found the body yet. But if we do find the body, what happens? Because of salt, he gets, you know, the salt eats the flesh up very, very quickly. So that's one of it. And when it gets washed out, you'll find it is brittle all over the shore. You know, everything is like the skin is all coming out and all that. That's what you'll do. But in a case like that, still post-mortem has to be done. Whether you like it or you don't like it, you say, you know what, my family friend was drowned. Now if he has come out, why they want to take you to the mortuary? That's the law becomes unnatural. You have to go. You have to do. If a building is burnt completely and somebody got burnt in there, you can't even... What we see, nothing is like, you know, you only see, there's hardly anything. What happens in a case like that? People will ask, you know, you can't even do ghusl. So you just do it the three sunnah way and you put kafan and you bury it. That's how it is. So even in the this thing, the bodies get washed away from high seas because of salt content and everything. The body is like virtually you won't find too much of it because your skin gets eaten up very, very quickly, especially with salt water.
Brother says, for my observation here, but there are certain hearse drivers that have attitude. They treat us like we are children, like we know nothing. Please, Ahmad, who do we report them to? Sometimes they insult elderly, big people. Please, Ahmad, this issue has to be addressed. Ahmad?
Shafat, you know, I've been the chairperson for Islamic Veritas Council for the last 25 years. And occasionally you get complaints like this. And, you know, so it's a two-way thing. You know, I'm not saying some of our hearse drivers are maybe rude at times. But, you know, sometimes our community as well, too, they want to do weird things. And then we tell them one time, two times, three times, then the guy gets a little bit itchy, gets a little bit irritable of the way that this guy keep hounding him. He wants to do this. You know, they come and make life difficult. Because we know, you know, all our hearse drivers and all that. Firstly, we must, you know, make dua that, you know, these people... to do this work, you know, to get up 1 o'clock in the morning, and now winter time, they go and do it. Yes, there is one or two of them. They might have attitude, but you know, you make sabr and you carry on, because at the end of the day, that guy is doing he does a fi sabilillah. He leave his hot bed, he leave his wife, children, you know, today to go out there. They even hijacking her ambulance today, did you know, things are happening. But it could be sometimes, I'm not taking their part or anything, if he's, you know, if a guy is arrogant, he should be reprimanded. And we get this complaint, and the brother can send a letter to Islamic Burial Council, address it to the chairperson of the Islamic Burial Council, whoever it is, which burial society, and tell him, you know what, he must look into it. You know, end of the day, respect is very, very important. I fully agree with the brother. You know, you can't treat anybody like children, and if you're elderly people, you know, you respect them. So, you know, in my time, I was very, very particular with me. I bring them, they come to me, they say, you know, how this guy is treating me. Some of them telling us what to do, and we keep telling them they don't want to listen. You know, I said, you know what, you have chosen to do this work here, you have to just make supper and bring it for the sake of Allah and carry on.
Ah, Jazakallah for that. And Ahmad, perhaps a question beckons, how do you, you know, choose the bus driver? Is it a volunteer that first come and you give them the job? Or, you know, you let them be volunteers, Ahmad?
Shafat, I didn't get that question right.
We're talking about bus drivers, how you choose them. When they come to you and they volunteer, you just give them the job, or you do a checkup on them, Ahmad?
No, you know, a lot of volunteers come to us. We take them, you know, when we're going to pick up. Especially we do mainly... First, we don't want to make them despondent and all that. Firstly, some of them are very, very timid. And, you know, when you take them firstly to the morgue, finish, then next day, next week is not coming back. So what we do is mainly we take them to do the natural causes where the person got a heart attack at home, pick up that body, let them help them to load that body. Try, if he's a good driver, tell him to drive, or you sit there. One of our guys sit next to him and said, drive this, you know, you can't drive more than 100 or 80 kilometers in a residential area, whatever it is, and show him and how to pick up the body, how to hold the body, how to put the body on the tray, all that we show them. And a lot of people are coming now. There's a lot of youngsters are getting involved, and that is a very, very good sign, you know, to keep the momentum going and keep it moving to let the youngsters take over eventually. This is a good sign. In fact, we are also thinking of amalgamating our ambulance service and showing them how to do paramedics work and everything. In fact, we're bringing one or two of our youngsters into our rescue 786 to show them when we're going to a house what we have to do, how to check the pressure, how to do what and everything else like that. So the youngsters are coming into the fold and they're learning at the same time how it's been done.
You know, Ahmad, whilst we talk about all the history and what you have done so far, We have to go to sorts of references. You know, there was an Arabic study circle. So many organizations came out of that. And then we looked at Darul Yatama wal Masajin. I mean, these are all pioneer organizations that, you know, brought in and motivated various societies, orphanages, and so forth. Perhaps a comment from you, Ahmad.
So, but, you know, this is what I've been saying. The next step is, you know, in fact, we're just finalizing the Islamic Burial Council national body. And then, you know, what is happening at the moment is, you know, there's too many organizations. So, yeah, we need to now put all the organizations in one database. So if a person press one button, he must be able to find if he wants relief, if he needs old age home, if he needs molanas, if he needs to go to hospital, which government hospitals, ambulance service, burial service, orphanage, then you got all your zakatable cases, who's giving hampers, where they can get hampers, all that, you know, then you got your cancer association. There's a whole lot of organization. We need to now bring them under one umbrella body. But, you know, most of the thing, you know, there's a lot of have been duplicated and all that. You know, they're doing the same thing, but nobody wants to let go of it because they're also, everyone is collecting lila and zakat, lila and zakat. Now, I'm saying if we bring the similar work, there's maybe 8 or 10, bring them under one. And even we know for the last 3 years, he's collecting 2 million a year. So let him get his 2 million allocation, but do it under one umbrella body. Make it easier in terms of getting your donation, in terms of getting all your equipment, whatever you need, make it easier. But the problem that we're having is everybody don't want to let go. They say, no, no, no. We want to run our own thing. We don't want to join anyone and all that. The only thing I was, with the help of Allah, I was very successful is to bring all the burial society under one umbrella body. That was, you know, still people talk about it today. How we manage that, only Allah knows best. But the thing is this, you know, we still talk from the same voice. If there's a problem in government department, we go and tackle it in the government department and work together, and this is it. And that is making a big difference also. This is the formula we have found. And in fact, if that can be done with one database in every NGOs, NPOs, and all that, it will make a big difference because, you know, time has come. There's hardly any, you know, you take this, Ramzan went past, there was more zakat money than lila money. So time will come. You can't use zakat in masjid and all that. We are looking for more lila for your masjid, madrasas, and all that. What happens then? So now I'm also saying you need to get self-sufficient in most of your masjids and all that, where you don't have to go look out for money. You know, if you take Unit 8 Masjid in Phoenix, we did a whole lot of renovation a couple of years ago. I sorted that out. Now I'm telling them there's a big plot land there. Put some office block there. Like you take like what I spoke to Babu Sufi many years ago, and they got the office block on the top. Now they got the office block in the bottom. It became self-sufficient. You're not going out and looking for too much of money to make your masjid self-sufficient because you got your light, water, rain. I mean, your light, water, your workers' fee, this thing, imams' fees, everything. You must be able to get it from your rental, from your own property, instead of going and looking out for money.
Well, I'm a very valid point there indeed. And if you look at the Grace Street Masjid, they are self-sufficient. I mean, they don't go out on, you know, canvas donations, right? Do they?
Gee, Shabbat, sorry?
Shabbat,
lying in bed today.
But Ahmad, we just have some gremlins coming through. I'm talking about the Green Street Masjid. I mean, they get so many shopping centers and all these other buildings. They don't have to go and canvas for funds, Ahmad.
They don't have to look for, you know, alhamdulillah, would they? We know our forefathers have a oversight or in those years. So when they did it, they made sure that they put the masjid with the shops around it, so that made it self-sufficient for the whole masjid.
That's how we get into the segment. As we talk, Ahmad Farooq, and Alhamdulillah, get your questions in. We would be fielding it to Ahmad. We'll be answering that. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And what's the latest when it comes to the E20 matters in Durban, Ahmad?
At the moment, if you read the press, if you're listening to the news, the Itigwini municipality, you can say it's international scrap at the moment, because on Wednesday we had a meeting. They had the state of the city addressed, and we had a massive debate regarding this the infrastructure. What kind of a debate you want to have when this mayor cannot give any answer when he started speaking, and then he didn't, the speaker did not give us permission to ask those relevant questions to the mayor, and eventually we had to all walk out. And so most of the people walked out beside the ANC, EFF were left, and one or two of the smaller parties were left behind. So the state of the city at the moment, Shafat, you can say, I don't think we want to get it right in a long time, because, firstly, you can see the load shedding has gone up to stage 8 now. And then, yesterday alone, we had it times. So in other words, 2 times 3 is 6 hours a day. And if you're using diesel, you know how much that is costing us. And then people do not have generators, do not have solar systems or anything like that. And what about all the food stuff they got, fridges and all? My concern is also this Kurbani. A lot of people is going to be cutting less. Normally they cut 2-3 sheep or whatever they're cutting, and they will be thinking twice now. One, we have a massive problem in for storage, because our freezers and all cold meat, people use for the next couple of months after Kurbani, they know they don't have to worry about meat, because it's they cut the Kurbani, and they got for a few months, they got no problem in terms of buying meat from the butchers or anything like that. Now, how are you going to sustain it, because you got freezers, and freezers, if you want to have load shedding like what we're having at the moment, and if it goes anything beyond that 6 to 10 hours, then we have a massive problem. Meat will start going off, perishable stuff that you can't even bring additional veg and all to keep. People buy additional veg and all that, they won't be buying. Now you're buying on a day-to-day, on a day-to-day basis. So that is going to be a massive problem. And now when you're doing on a day-to-day, the prices have also has gone up drastically. When you've got veg and fruits and meat has gone up like to 25-30%. So you've got a massive problem in that area as well. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, but the power in the city, we were fortunate enough that because of the last year's flooding, that we were like exempted for a smaller period of load shedding. And then where we were getting from Swaziland, I'm not sure if the 3,000 megawatts is coming or they diverted it to the national grid. So we don't know there. That's another issue we're fighting at the moment. So there's a massive problem in terms of all that is at the moment. And then we can't get our infrastructure right. And so it's going to be a massive uphill battle till we sort our life out here in the Itigwini municipality, Shabbat.
Then I mean that, you get this type of story where they say, the price of fuel will go down soon and the price of electricity. I mean, who's making this type of noise? I mean, it seems like this individual doesn't know what he's talking about, Ahmad.
Shabbat, on the 31st of this month here, I think there's about 54 ratepayers association is going to march to the exhibition center where we're going to be having our full council meeting, and they're going to be protesting there because they want a 21.5% tariff increase. They said everything is going up. Now, how can you have a tariff increase when you're not giving the service? People are prepared to pay. We all know things are going up. But for the last so many years, every year you're getting tariff increase for the people to steal from our ESCOM, to steal from our grid, to steal and give it to other neighboring countries' power, some of them that need. Why don't we cut all those things down and put it back into our grid so it will make it easier for our community? A lot of companies are actually folding. In fact, they want to invest in this country when almost 50 billion people have de-invested in the last 2 months. 50 billion. There's a lot of money that is, you know, where people's livelihood should have been more, where job creation should have been coming about. Nothing is going to happen now because with the way things are happening, they need somebody from the top to say, you know what, call the shots and make things happen. That is the only way we can save this city and we can save this country. We have to fix this country. And our slogan is, Action SA slogan is, let's fix South Africa. That is what we are trying. And they're losing grounds at the moment. You know, the ruling party, ANC, is losing massive ground because they can see in all the by-elections, they're losing the by-election. That is it. That is the reason they sent the top Rakhi 2 weeks ago to come and put the city right, put this province right. They brought it under 154, Section 154. In other words, from the national government, they sent a whole delegation to oversee it for the entire province. We think, no, what can they do at the moment? The thing is so bad, you need to clean up from one side and come. You need to start working first from your HR department, do due diligence in all the various departments and clean, because you've got ghost workers there. People are not working full hours there. The workshops got no equipment. They don't have space. How are they going to work? Fix everything up first. And that's the only way. Cut down on your staff because people are sitting and doing nothing. Cut it down and then make sure you start delivering. Once you start delivering, people will be happy. They don't mind giving the increase because they can see things are happening. They will have less load sharing. All that is, and the roads are fixed. There's thousands of applications for household, the plans to be passed. They're holding on to it because there's no additional sewage pipes to get the system running. So how are they going to? So the building industry is going to come to a standstill now because they're not going to be able to pass this plan, and the building industry is going to take a beating as well.
Yes, Ahmad, you know, whilst we were talking, messages coming through. This is from Abajab. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmad Paluk. I'm a refugee from Burundi, and I've been working at a long distance driver until recently. But when my truck was burnt with all the fuel, stopped the job. Now I'm doing Uber. But now the taxis are doing sin to us. They are threatening us. They make us pay them 5,000 a month for their routes and so on. Please, Ahmad, South Africa has become so unbearable. And it seems that the locals here in this country, they are lazy and don't want to work. We foreigners have come here and we work very hard, but they're making it so difficult. Please help my beloved brother." How do you respond, brother? I think he's got his name there. It's Rajab, Ahmad.
Rajab, I feel sorry for him because, you know, our locals, they don't want to work. They became like mafia. They say, no, you work and you got to pay us tax. Now, how can now you paying your national, you paying your government tax, now you want this tax? You can't do any building. Anyway, you're putting a building or anything, they come there, they want tax because they say, no, you're putting up here, you're not employing local, you're employing foreigners, we want tax. You can't do that. End of the day, you know, it came like a mafia state. Every time you move, you know, when you go to India, as soon as you move one step, if you don't pay, you don't get your work done. It's becoming, South Africa is becoming like that. You can't operate a country in that way. So that is the only problem we have faced at the moment. That, you know, Rajab is he's right. We can't help him. The bond is struck. Now if his poor fellow wants to drive Uber now because the taxi industry as well as they're taking a beating, so they want him out of the equation, so they will get more business. This is what is happening at the moment. So, you know, every move you're making, there's putting a roadblock for you. That's what's actually happening.
No, it's a very sad thing indeed. And here you find that people, you know, working very hard. Then we find that, you know, like our Dawa, the stands up and you know, maybe Jamaica Buluma and so forth, all these people out. And how much can they really do?
You know, Shafas, you know, we at the moment, our hands are tight. There's not much you can do because, you know, at the end of the day, and, you know, if you take give up, they give us Alindar and all that. You know what? We are giving and giving. These are the same people, they're going and burning the school. You know, I went now to about maybe five or six schools, and there was no food there because they had the 4.3 billion rand contract given, and then the person who's got the contract, he got massive warehouses and everything. But he was not delivering. Now, end of the day, when one of my colleagues met him personally and then said, you know what? What is going on there? He says, you know what? I'm in another different trade, but I was given this tender. I thought it was all rosy. I got the warehouses. I got my own money. I put the infrastructure together. When we went there, Shafat, he had heaps and heaps of cabbages that you name it, all rotten and he's smelling that place. I told him, you know what? My colleague told him, first thing, get your truck guy to come and clear all this thing and go and dump all this thing before you got some other good stuff, canned stuff, and all for the school. You know, you need to start delivering. Those people are, the children are hungry. Some schools, they come in the morning, they're closing at like 11 o'clock. The children can't survive. They don't come with anything. There is no food for them. We went out of our way. We went and brought canned stuff. We got cereals for them where you only just put the hot water and we got, you know, money. We started helping them at the moment. But how long can you help them? Where the money was there and they can't do it. Now, in rural area is worse because there's absolutely no deliveries at all there. If you go to Pangani, Zululand, where Ngoma, there's nothing is happening there because we're sending food from here to assist those poor schools. Now, how do you function? Yet the funding was there. This is the problem that we are faced with.
Which is a very sad story indeed, Amanda, you know, when you look at that. Looking at this message, Amanda, is it true that there is a railway line being made from Durban to the Ushaka airport? I was seeing the other day while I was driving down, that they are building in the middle of the freeway. Please tell us, Ahmad, is it true that they're building a railway line from Durban to Ushaka?
No, there's no. Actually, what they're doing is there's a massive contract for the roads to be widening the roads. They're putting extra lanes there. There's no rail line from Durban to Ushaka. There's no such thing like that, Shafat.
You know, Ahmad, you would think deeply that perhaps, you know, the railway system needs to be upgraded in this country. So maybe, you know, it will take away the congestion of trucks and so forth, even transportation to the airport even simpler, and maybe even get to the CBD, take away all the congestions. What's your thoughts on that?
Shafat, there was a railway from here to Pinetown, Hammersdale side, even that thing, it was ready. I'm not sure now what happened. Apparently, the wrong size locomotives were sent to the country from China, so they went back now to China to rectify that. So that is a major issue. There's a rail line that was recently upgraded from Durban to Joburg for container. Apparently, all the rail they even stole the tracks from the route. So that is they have brought us back for about another year backwards now. So these are the things that we are facing all the time. You're putting one step forward, you're taking 10 steps back at the moment. That is the problem that we are faced with. You know, there's no security system in place. They, you know, they're doing things, they leave it, and by the time they come back to it, there's nothing left, and they have to restart again.
Yeah, Ahmad, you know, thinking of that, that story indeed. Look at this message. It says, Ahmad, I want to know why some of our Muslim brothers, the Lanis, that they give so much money to Cyril Ramaphosa. You know, Ramaphosa is a pala pala man. He's got a lot of money under his mattress. He's getting a lot of money from the World Economic Forum and so forth. Why are our brothers giving him so much of money? Please, Ahmad, tell them not to do it. Ahmad.
You know, so when I was speaking to one or two of my business friends and all that, I told him, you know what? There's a young party, actually, say was born 2 years ago. We fought only six municipalities in the country. We got 109 seats in the municipality. And you need to support us. And you need, he says, you know what, my brother, I accept, but I do business with the black community, and you know who's in power. And if they only come to know that you know, I have supported you guys, and they are the ruling party, my business is going to be suffering. So, you know, that's an answer I got from a very top businessman, and he's a massive business he does in this country. So, you know, I said, yeah, I agree with you, but the thing is the time has come now. The ANC is not going to be in power for very long. So then what do you want to do? Then you want to go to the smaller guys, you know, the parties like our size, which is up, and we should be the second biggest or third biggest party in the country. And then what do you want to do? Because then you want to be working with coalition. Then what do you want to do? Then you want to come to us and you need some favors in government or anything. Then we want to tell you, you know, remember what you told us. Then what happens in the case? So I said, you know what? If I were you, my brother, you start dividing your if you're giving ANC and you're taking it off tax, you're allowed to give to political parties, and you can take it off tax and divide it among the other parties as well, because you don't close your doors, because the 2024 is around the corner and you'll need us. So that is that's what you need to do. And he said, yeah, you're right there. So I think the brother is seriously considering that, you know what, he can't put all his eggs into one basket, because he's, in the end, he's going to come and bite him.
No, absolutely, you can't put your eggs in one basket. This question says, Assalamu alaikum, Muhammad. I want to know why Julius Malema gets so much of coverage by the BBC. It seems they won't give your party head time, but they give Julius Malema a lot of time on BBC. Why, Ahmed? That's a very good question, Ahmed.
Shabbat, at the moment, alhamdulillah, I make shukr, especially in KZN, and, you know, because I'm linked up with all the media stations and everything, and my chairperson and I, we're getting a lot of coverage, and because we're going for the niche market. We're exposing things that what wrong they're doing, and that's what the public wants to know. They want to know what wrong is happening in the city. We picked up now 2016 monies was channeled to a lawyer and was given to the ANC, and all the payments were done to all the creditors through a lawyer's office. So now we have found that thing. We're looking for things that what wrong they have done, and that way, like this school nutrition program, we found out that how these schools were suffering, and then we did our own investigation, and that we exposed them. We found out the raw sewer was going into the river and the sea. We went to High Court. We went and saw the things that was not happening when there was only two tar manufacturing entities, and one was not working for the last 8 months. We want to know why, when the system was there, the money was there to repair it and get the tar manufactured and getting all our potholes done. That's why it was not done. So that's where we got all our potholes, because they haven't got enough tar to fix all the roads. So we're exposing things in a way that they don't know when it's going to come and bite them. And that's what we are doing as a one. Keep, you know, like we are like a woodpecker, keep poking them all the time. And that's where they're getting very irritable with us, because every time we take them to court, we hit them with a letter, we give them 7 days. Now what we are doing at the moment is we're putting all the ratepayers association together, and then we want to bring a class action to the city, bring the whole entire city to a standstill, because if they don't get money for 1 month, they're in big trouble. So that will give us the leverage to bring it under 139, section 139. So they put it under administration, so then we can call the shots. We say, right, this, that we want, and the administrator have to start finding a way and start cleaning up the city. That is the only way, because you're not going to win otherwise. We're just waiting for 2024, so when they get uprooted, new people will be in their job, and they must start cleaning up from one side, all the departments, and we can get it right. This, Shafat, the infrastructure is here. because of lack of maintenance, lack of good people, top engineers, top consultants, everyone, they bombed them and they brought their own job for parents there, and that's where we are suffering today.
This question here says, Ahmed Barak, how come all of a sudden the sewage problem has come right? Thank Allah, my town doesn't stink anymore. What happened, Ahmed?
They are stuck, you know, because we in court, and they had like last week to give all the replying affidavits and everything, and they behind, far behind. So now they're trying to do something very, very quickly in the last 2 months to make things happen, to go to court and say, you know what, we fixed Dyker Road up, we fixed Musgrave Road up, we fixed Amslanga Ridge, we fixed this. They're trying to do whatever just to show them that, you know what, these guys have brought a court application, but in the meantime, we have already fixed this, that the sewage line is working, the stink is no more there and all that. You know, they're trying to, but if we didn't bring that application, things won't happen. That's the problem.
I live in Chatsworth, in Westcliff, and I must tell you, my areas are all voting for the DA. It seems that the DA is building roads because of the fear factor and a mongering of the ANC. They say there are no more jobs for Indians and colored people. These are my advice.
Shafan, he's talking about that Westcliff, they where had that Ward 73 DA member left the DA and he went and joined the ANC. Nobody's going to, you know, he made the biggest flop of his lifetime. He was earning in the region of 40 grand a month, and then now he went and joined ANC. Who's going to vote for ANC when they cannot deliver service deliveries and all that? That is it. So the people in Chatsworth had no other alternative to vote for the DA again, and that's it. And we didn't want to contest the by-election because we were not ready. Now we are putting our plans together, and then we are concentrating more instead of putting money into a by-election, and we are putting money into for the national election that is going to take place in 2024. And we're coming with storm. We will take Chatsworth, some of the seats. We will get our support in Chatsworth. We will get support in Chatsworth, Phoenix, in all the Indian areas. So that's where we are concentrating on, and that is it. So DA, from 91%, they only came down to 73%. So there was a dwindle in their results as well. They only won it because they had to fight against ANC. It was easy. When we were offered to take this, because we were fighting Nangoma, and we said, more than Chatsworth first, let's go test the rural area, and then we wanted to test one of the other Indian areas as well. But time constraint, therefore we couldn't do it in time. Therefore we went and did it in Nangoma, and we went into the heart of Nangoma, and we got 10.2%. So we know, now we know with the strength we got, we're even getting our support in the heart of the black community as well. Same thing is going to happen in Chatsworth and Phoenix. So, you know, DA, if you read this morning's paper, Shafa, this morning's paper, you won't believe it, DA councillors turn on each other. They got massive problem within themselves at the moment. You know, there's a big problem within themselves. So they need to clean their backyard too.
Yeah, absolutely. Ahmed, a great morning in your company. Perhaps your parting word before I let you go.
Yeah, Shafat, alhamdulillah, you know, I always said that in this country here, you got right of religion, right of culture. We must just make dua and carry on and then vote come 2024. Now you don't even have to go and when the voting registration is open, you don't even have to go. Today you do it over the phone, on your phone, and you'll be able to register yourself. Register yourself, and then in before the voting in 2024, a lot of our people cannot go out there. We can even make 2 days or 3 days concession. They come to your house and they'll come and vote. Vote, then only you'll have a say. No use sitting back and crying and saying, you know, I can't get this done. My rates are gone up. I'm not getting water. My electricity is getting chopped out. All these problems can be solved, you have to cast your vote. Then only you will ever say, Shabbat.
Absolutely, yeah, brilliant. You have a mashallah, beautiful day. Inshallah, we'll talk to you soon. As-salamu.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.